think DG. DG Nkosi. And your staff component who are here today. Welcome, sir. We've had the pleasure yesterday to be with the two ambassadors designate. We value the time that we are able to spend with them, of course, until later today. Honorable members, we know that we have two issues to deal with today. One is the briefing on Swaziland that we have requested last week, and the other will be a continuation of our workshop. Now, just looking at the time quickly, DDG Dlomo, you realize that already we're running into trouble with time. Let me apologize for myself and Honorable Mokgalapa and Honorable Makau. For some reason, we went to M515 where we were yesterday. So it took us about 10 minutes or so to realize that we're in the wrong place. Thank you so much. Honorable members, let me just note there are three apologies, one from Honorable Boy, Honorable Olomisa, Honorable Jacobus, the fourth one, and Honorable Dudley, who couldn't be here today for various reasons. And then secondly, yesterday the UNSC discussed Western Sahara. Now, they have started with negotiations on the text for a resolution that will hopefully emerge next week. I think just suffice it to say at this point, suffice it to say, Honorable Mobu, that one of the issues, of course, that South Africa is pushing is for a human rights assessment instrument that should be, located in Minoso, in the mission in Western Sahara, to evaluate and assess the human rights situation. Now, we know that there are indeed problems with human rights violations. So that is one of the issues that our department is pushing, elucidated yesterday by our permanent representative, Ambassador Paso Sango. So thank you so much, honorable members. DDG, I understand that your thing is up there. Okay, no, it's fine. Yes, his thing. No, he knows what thing it is.
It's working.
It's working. Yeah, it's working. DDG, we will not waste time because of the time constraints that we have. Yeah, no, it's house language. DDG, don't mind it. DDG, I hope that we will be receiving the slides at a later stage, the hard copies. All right. Chief, we have about an hour at the most. Obviously, we will eat into some of the time into our next session, but we have an hour at the most for the presentation and engagement. Thank you, sir.
Thanks very much, Honorable Chairperson, honorable members, it is our pleasure to present to you this morning some thoughts on Swaziland, as requested by the esteemed Portfolio Committee on international relations and cooperation. We think this briefing is timely in that it will afford us the opportunity to share with your esteemed selves some of the latest developments unfolding in the Kingdom of Swaziland, with whom we share borders, with whom we've got historical ties, with whom we're bond of cultural ties and affinities, linguistic ties, and indeed which is an important neighbor of South Africa. I'm sure members have been following developments in the kingdom through a number of medium, including the media. So, Chair, we will not dwell into some of the very miniature detail, so that we can afford the committee time to reflect on this briefing and also to provide counsel on how it thinks we should proceed with the issues that we face in the Kingdom of Swaziland. Maybe just to kick off and say that Swaziland faces, in our view, major socio-economic and political challenges, largely due to the nature of its political system, which, as we know, is an absolute monarchy, and also due to its heavy economic dependence on South Africa. This, in our view, defines the broad political challenge that the Kingdom of Swaziland faces. To date, it's still a modified traditional monarchy with executive and some legislative powers vested in King Mswati, the current monarch, the reigning monarch, King Mswati III. Following King Sobhuza's 1973 decree, in which he banned political parties and abandoned the country's constitution, political formations in Swaziland remain banned. This indeed has continued, as well as the arrest of some of the leading opposition figures, such as the president of Budemo, Mario Masuku, who has been subjected to several spells of detention by the Swazi authorities, who regard the activities of his movement to be undermining the national security of the kingdom. The opposition is divided, could be divided into three, mainly Budemo, the People's Democratic Movement led by Mario Masuku, the National Constitutional Assembly, NCA, and the Ngwane National Liberatory Congress, as well as the Sive Siyanqoba. Chief to all their demands is the call for change and political dialogue, which the king has reportedly dismissed. He has refused to have talks with all these movements, which he regards as dissenting voices in the kingdom. So you have this as one of the major grievances, the fact that the political formations have got a structured, highly constrained environment within which to operate. And they've been clamoring and yearning for political reforms. They've been keen to engage the kingdom with a view to discussing a political future for the country based on the will of the people. But of course, all these attempts have been rebutted by the authorities who have consistently refused to engage with these formations. The demands of these formations vary, even though in most instances one can say that they're united in their calls for a parliamentary system. They're united in their calls for a system that is modeled along the lines of Lesotho or along the lines of the UK, where you have the monarch acting more as a titular monarch without executive powers, and where the role and the power of parliament as a legislature based on representational democracy is a key element of what these formations are demanding. So neither of them have called for a full republican system, which does not foresee a role for a monarch. They all do foresee a role for the monarchy, albeit a monarchy that purely has ceremonial and not executive or legislative powers. Chair, key component of the Swazi crisis problem is an economic one, as we have mentioned. 85% of Swaziland's imports come from South Africa, and it imports 75% of its exports come to South Africa. So it's heavily dependent on South Africa. In addition to that, Swaziland has been benefiting generously from the revenues, from the SACU revenue common pool. Since 1910, they've been major beneficiaries of this since when they were a protectorate of Great Britain, of the United Kingdom. I'll come to the proposals by the IMF with regards to resolving the current economic crisis later in the presentation. Just to say that the year 2010 saw somewhat a compounded situation as the political challenges intensified, with pro-democracy formations continuing to put pressure on Swazi authorities to allow for political pluralism. As it was to be expected, these challenges were occasioned by continued banning of political parties as well as the economic difficulties which we've referred to. Noting the lukewarm and half-hearted response to these demands, pro-democracy formations and labor unions organized mass protests on the 18th of March and on the 12th of April. We saw that the momentum for demanding political reforms in Swaziland was also largely spared by the wave of uprisings that we see in the northern part of Africa and in the Middle East. There were calls by some sections of the leadership of the Swazi pro-democracy movement to embark in uprising similar to those that swept the authoritarian regimes of Tunisia and Egypt. But of course, as we will mention later in the presentation, it does appear that the momentum, this popular momentum, as it were, in Swaziland, has somehow fizzled out. The authorities have been able to contain and diffuse this popular movement for change, for democratic change and transformation in Swaziland. Chairperson, in 2008, Swazi authorities were shocked by an attempted bombing of a bridge near Lozita Palace, which apparently exploded prematurely, killing two bombers. And one of these was a South African. So there has been, in certain sections of the Swazi security and intelligence apparatus, concern about a possible role of elements from South Africa in undermining stability and security in Swaziland. The suspected bomber in this incident happens to be a South African, and he's currently incarcerated in Swaziland. We were in constant talks with the Swazi authorities to impress upon them to bring this trial of this gentleman to finality, so that indeed justice can be meted out within a reasonable period of time. In response to this incident, the bombing near the palace, as well as many other occasional protests that are regularly organized by a combination of political parties and civil society organizations, the Swazi authorities have promulgated various security legislations, including the anti-terrorism and sedition legislations, which are currently being challenged by the pro-reform movement. We've mentioned this part. It is evident that all these developments have generated quite a great deal of international interest as well as attention. And of course, there have been a lot of calls for South Africa to intervene to help the country to resolve its political problems. We are committed to good neighborliness and of course to allowing countries to determine their own destinies. And indeed, we're putting more premium and more emphasis on the need to strengthen the cordial relations that exist between ourselves, which I described earlier as a historic ties of friendship, of affinity between ourselves and the people of Swaziland. The situation, though, in Swaziland does provide a window of opportunity for South Africa to encourage political dialogue, and indeed to encourage the players to find an amicable solution to the current challenges. As indicated, another feature of the Swazi challenge is the economic dimension. Following the global economic recession, Swaziland was one of the countries that were severely affected by this, and the manifestation of this was the drop in the revenue, SACU revenue, that Swaziland gets from the SACU receipts. The drop in SACU revenue meant that Swaziland received 1.9 billion during the 2010-2011 financial year, compared to 5.1 billion in the previous financial year, 2008-2009. This is a huge cut, by any stretch of imagination. It's a massive cut in the revenues, which constitute over 60% of Swaziland's budget. So it's a huge cut. Swaziland's economy is reportedly underperforming compared to other SACU members, reflecting both the impact of the global economic crisis and the lack of competitiveness. As we know, there's no industrial base in Swaziland. There's no manufacturing base. The country imports all finished products, goods, and services from South Africa. And it largely exports raw materials, timber, and so on, into South Africa. The prevailing economic situation has therefore forced Swaziland to revisit the economic policy, resulting in the adoption of the fiscal adjustment roadmap, known as the FAR, in order to improve the fiscal balance. The FAR is reported to have been presented to the IMF in an effort to try and convince the international financial institutions to provide a letter of comfort which would allow the Swazi government to solicit $100 million support from the African Development Bank. As expected, the IMF has made a set of recommendations, and Swaziland has been compelled to review her economic policy. This, of course, was not received well by the broader public, as it meant that the Swazi government had to make some drastic changes which could severely affect some of the people it is supposedly meant to protect. In consultation with the IMF, the Swazi government has adopted the FAR with the following measures, very austere, very tight measures on their own. A fuel levy, which has been introduced in the country for the first time. And of course, this is going to lead to food inflation. It's going to lead to high levels of inflation with people unable to meet their basic needs for basic foodstuffs like bread and so on. A 10% salary cut from the public service salaries. Introduction of VAT and capital gains tax. Which have never been levied in the kingdom. The creation of a revenue authority to help to collect revenue, which has been one of the major weaknesses in the Swazi economy. A freeze on the wage bill for 3 years, filling of vacancies, cuts in expenditure on goods and services, and the introduction of a performance management system. To improve the procurement, accounting, and auditing practices. The national protest that was scheduled for the 12th of April went on as planned, but as we saw in the media, the Swazi authorities responded to these uprisings and were able to contain. And diffuse them, and in a way cut short this momentum for popular resistance and popular uprising, as we saw in the Maghreb region. The South African government has called for calm and we've called for restraint. We've urged the parties to engage in dialogue with a view to find a political solution to the problem. And indeed, we have availed ourselves to the Swazis to help them to deal with the political challenges that they face. In spite of the offer by the Swazi government through its foreign minister to initiate a dialogue with the reform movement, there have been consistent calls from these movements for political reform, for pluralism, and for change in Swaziland. Chairperson, we'll end the presentation there. And we are available to take questions from the esteemed committee. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, TDG, Acting TG, Nkosi. Honorable members, there's a briefing. Any questions, engagement with the briefing? Honorable Skosana.
Excuse me, Chairperson. Can I just take a 2 minute comfort break, 1 minute comfort break?
Sure, you need a comfort break.
Please, just 1 minute.
Okay.
I won't be long. Thank you.
Let's run 1 minute.